Shallan finished her prayer, then held it up, noticing that a previous page had been ripped out of the notebook. Who had done that? She couldn't burn the prayer, but she didn't think the Almighty would mind. She pressed it close to her breast and closed her eyes, waiting until the shouts from below quieted. 21. Ashes. Mediation form, made for peace, it said. Form of teaching and consolation. When used by the gods, it became instead form of lies and desolation. From the Listener's Song of Listing, 33rd stanza. Shallan closed Bluth's eyes, not looking at the ripped-out hole in his torso, the bloody entrails. Around her, workers salvaged what they could from the camp. People groaned, though some of those groans cut off as Vatha executed the bandits one by one. Shallan didn't stop him. He did the duty grimly, and as he walked past, he didn't look at her. He's thinking these bandits could have easily been him and his men, Shallan thought, looking back down at Bluth, his dead face lit by fires. What separates the heroes from the villains? One speech in the night? Bluth wasn't the only casualty of the assault. Vatha had lost 7 soldiers. They had killed over twice that many bandits. Exhausted, Shallan rose, but hesitated as she saw something poking out of Bluth's jacket. She leaned down and pushed the jacket open. There, stuffed in his pocket, was her picture of him. The one that depicted him not as he was, but as she imagined he might once have been. A soldier in an army in a crisp uniform, eyes forward rather than looking down all the time. A hero. When had he taken it from her sketchbook? She slipped it free and folded it, flattening the wrinkles. "I was wrong," she whispered. "You were a fine way to restart my collection, Bluth. Fight well for the Almighty in your sleep, bold one." She rose and looked over the camp. Several of the caravan's parshmen pulled corpses to the fires for burning. Shallan's intervention had rescued the merchants, but not without heavy losses. She hadn't counted, but the toll looked high. Dozens dead, including most of the caravan's guards, among them the Iriali man from earlier in the night. In her fatigue, Shallan wanted to crawl into her wagon and curl up for sleep. Instead, she went looking for the caravan leaders. The haggard, blood-stained scout from before stood beside a travel table, where she was talking to an older, bearded man in a felt cap. His eyes were blue, and he moved his fingers through his beard as he looked over a list the woman had brought him. Both looked up as Shallan approached. The woman rested a hand on her sword. The man continued to stroke his beard. Nearby, caravan workers sorted through the contents of a wagon that had toppled over, spilling bales of cloth.
"And here is our savior," the older man said. "Brightness, the winds themselves cannot speak of your majesty or the wonder of your timely arrival."
Shallan didn't feel majestic. She felt tired, sore, and grungy. Her bare feet, hidden by the bottom of her skirts, had started to ache again, and her ability to light weave was expended. Her dress looked almost as bad as a pauper's, and her hair, though braided, was an absolute mess. "You are the caravan owner?" Shallan asked.
"Makob is my name," he said.
She couldn't place his accent. Not Thalen or Alethi.
"You have met my associate Tin."
He nodded toward the woman.
"She is head of our guards. Both her soldiers and my goods have dwindled from tonight's encounters."
Tin folded her arms. She still wore her tan coat, and in the light of Makob's spheres, Shallan could see that it was of fine leather. What to make of a woman who dressed like a soldier and wore a sword at her waist?
"I've been telling Makob of your offer," Tin said. "Earlier, on the hill."
Makob chuckled, an incongruous sound considering their surroundings.
Offer, she calls it. My associate is under the impression that it was really a threat. These mercenaries obviously work for you. We are wondering what your intention is for this caravan.
The mercenaries didn't work for me before, Shallan said. But they do now. It took a little persuasion.
Tin raised an eyebrow. That must have been some mighty fine persuasion, brightness.
Shallan Devar. All I ask of you is what I said to Tin before. Accompany me to the Shattered Plains.
Surely your soldiers can do that, Makob said. You don't need our assistance.
I want you here to remind the soldiers what they've done, Shallan thought. Her instinct said that the more reminders of civilization the deserters had, the better off she would be. They are soldiers, Shallan said. They have no idea how to properly convey a light-eyed woman in comfort. You, however, have nice wagons and goods aplenty. If you can't tell from my humble aspect, I am in dreadful need of a little luxury. I'd rather not arrive at the Shattered Plains looking like a vagabond.
We could use her soldiers, Tin said. My own force is reduced to a handful.
She inspected Shallan again, this time with curiosity. It wasn't an unfriendly look.
Then we shall make an accord, Makob said, smiling broadly and reaching across the table toward Shallan. In my gratitude for my life, I shall see you cared for with new apparel and fine foodstuffs for the duration of our travels together. You and your men will ensure our safety the rest of the way, and then we will part. Nothing more owed to one another.
Agreed, Shallan said, taking his hand. I shall allow you to join me. Your caravan unto mine, he hesitated.
Your caravan?
Yes.
And your authority, then, I assume?
You expected otherwise? He sighed, but shook on the deal.
No, I suppose not. I suppose not.
He released her hand, then waved toward a pair of people off at the side of the wagons. To Vlakov and Tag.
And what of those?
They are mine, Shallan said. I will deal with them.
Just keep them at the back of the caravan, if you will,
Makob said, wrinkling his nose.
Grimy business. I'd rather not our caravan stink of those wares. Either way, you'd best be about gathering your people. There will be a high storm soon. With our lost wagons, we have no extra shelter.
Shallan left them and made her way across the valley, trying to ignore the mingled stench of blood and char. A shape split from the darkness, moving in beside her. Vatha didn't look any less intimidating in the better light here. Well? Shallan asked him.
Some of my men are dead, he said,
his voice a monotone. They died doing a very good work, Shallan said. And the families of these who lived will bless them for their sacrifice. Vatha took her arm, pulling her to a stop. His grip was firm, even painful.
You don't look like you did before, he said.
She hadn't realized how much he towered over her.
Did my eyes mistake me? I saw a queen in the darkness. Now I see a child.
Perhaps you saw what your conscience needed you to see, Shallan said, tugging unsuccessfully on her arm. She blushed. Vatha leaned in. His breath wasn't particularly sweet.
My men have done worse things than this, he whispered, waving his other hand at the burning dead. Out in the wilderness we took. We killed. You think one night absolves us? You think one night will stop the nightmares?
Shallan felt a hollowness in her stomach.
If we go with you to the Shattered Plains, we're dead men, Vatha said. We'll be hanged the moment we return.
My word...
Your word means nothing, woman,
he shouted, grip tensing.
You should let her go, Pattern said calmly from behind him.
Vatha spun, looking about, but they weren't near anyone in particular. Shallan spotted Pattern on the back of Vatha's uniform as he turned.
Who said that?
Vatha demanded. I heard nothing, Shallan said, somehow managing to sound calm.
You should let her go, Pattern repeated.
Vatha looked around again, then back at Shallan, who met his gaze with a level stare. She even forced out a smile. He let go of her and wiped his hand on his trousers, then retreated. Pattern slipped down his back and leg onto the ground, then skimmed toward Shallan. That one will be trouble, Shallan said, rubbing the place where he'd gripped her.
Is this a figure of speech? Pattern asked.
No, I mean what I said.
Curious, Pattern said, watching Vatha retreat. Because I think he already is trouble.
True. She continued her way toward Tavlakov, who sat on the seat of his wagon with hands clasped before him. He smiled toward Shallan as she arrived, though the expression seemed particularly thin on him today.
So, he asked conversationally, were you in on it from the start?
In on what? Shallan asked wearily, shooing Tag away so she could talk to Tavlakov in private.
Bluth's plan.
Please do tell.
Obviously, Tavlakov said. He was in league with the deserters. That first night when he came running back to the camp, he'd met with them and promised to let them take us if he could share in the wealth. That was why they did not immediately kill you two when you went to speak with them.
Oh? Shallan asked. And if that were the case, why did Bluth come back and warn us that night? Why did he flee with us instead of just letting his friends kill us right then?
Perhaps he only met with a few of them, Tavlakov said. Yes, they lit fires on that hillside in the night to make us think there were more. And then his friends went to gather a larger crowd. And,
he deflated,
storms. That doesn't make any sense. But why? How? We should be dead.
The Almighty preserved us, Shallan said.
Your Almighty is a farce.
You should hope he is, Shallan said, walking to the back of Tag's wagon nearby. For if he is not, then damnation itself awaits men like you. She inspected the cage. 5 slaves in grimy clothing huddled inside, each one looking alone, though they were crammed in close. These are mine now, Shallan told Tavlakov.
What?
He stood up on his seat. I saved your life. You oily little man, Shallan said. You will give me these slaves in payment. Dues in recompense for my soldiers protecting you and your worthless life.
This is robbery.
This is justice. If it bothers you, submit a grievance with the king in the Shattered Plains once we arrive.
I'm not going to the Shattered Plains, Tavlakov spat. You have someone else to convey you now, Brightness. I'm heading south as I originally intended.
Then you'll do so without these, Shallan said, using her key, the one he had given her to get into her wagon, to open the cage. You will give me their writs of slavery, and the storm father help you if not everything is in order, Tavlakov. I'm very good at spotting a forgery. She hadn't ever even seen a writ of slavery, and wouldn't know how to tell if one was faked. She didn't care. She was tired, frustrated, and eager to be done with this night. One by one, 5 hesitant slaves stepped from the wagon, shaggy bearded and shirtless. Her trip with Tavlakov had not been pleasant, but it had been luxurious compared to what these men had been through. Several glanced at the darkness nearby, as if eager. You may run if you wish, Shallan said, softening her tone. I will not hunt you. I need servants, however, and I will pay you well. 6 fire marks a week if you agree to put 5 of them toward paying down your slave debt. 1 if you don't. One of the men cocked his head.
So, we take away the same amount either way? What kind of sense does that make?
The best kind, Shallan said, turning to Tavlakov, who sat stewing on the side of his seat. You have 3 wagons, but only 2 drivers. Will you sell me the 3rd wagon? She wouldn't need the chul. Makob would have an extra she could use, since several of his wagons had burned.
Sell the wagon? Bah! Why not just steal it from me?
Stop being a child, Tavlakov. Do you want my money or not?
5 sapphire bromes, he snapped. And it's a steal at that price. Don't you argue otherwise.
She didn't know if it was or not, but she could afford it, with the spheres she had, even if most of them were done.
You can't have my parchment,
Tavlakov snapped. You can keep them, Shallan said. She would need to talk to the caravan master about shoes and clothing for her servants. As she walked off to see if she could use an extra chul of Makob's, she passed a group of the caravan workers waiting to the side of one of the bonfires. The deserters threw the last body, one of their own, into the flames, then stepped back, wiping brows. One of the dark-eyed caravan women stepped up, holding out a sheet of paper to a former deserter. He took it, scratching at his beard. He was the shorter, one-eyed man who'd spoken during her speech. He held up the sheet to the others. It was a prayer made from familiar runes, but not one of mourning, as Shallan would have expected to see. It was a prayer of thanks. The former deserters gathered in front of the flames and looked at the prayer. Then they turned and looked outward, seeing, as if for the first time, the 2 dozen people standing there and watching, silent in the night. Some had tears on their cheeks, some held the hands of children. Shallan had not noticed the children before, but was not surprised to see them. Caravan workers would spend their lives traveling, and their families would travel with them. Shallan stopped just beyond the caravaneers, mostly hidden in the darkness. The deserters didn't seem to know how to react, surrounded by that constellation of thankful eyes and tearful appreciation. Finally, they burned the prayer. Shallan bowed her head as they did, as did most of those watching. She left them standing taller, watching the ashes of that prayer rise toward the Almighty.
22. Lights in the Storm. Storm form is said to cause a tempest of winds and showers. Beware its powers, beware its powers. Though its coming brings the gods their night, it obliges a blood-red spren. Beware its end, beware its end. From the Listener's Song of Winds, 4th Stanza. Kaladin watched the window shutters. Motion came in bursts. First stillness. Yes, he could hear a distant howling, the wind passing through some hollow, but nothing nearby. A tremble, then wood rattling wickedly in its frame, violent shaking with water seeping in at the joints. Something was out there in the dark chaos of the high storm. It thrashed and pounded at the window, wanting in. Light flashed out there, glistening through the drops of water. Another flash. Then the light stayed, steady, like glowing spheres just outside. Faintly red. For some reason he couldn't explain, Kaladin had the impression of eyes. Transfixed, he raised his hand toward the latch to open it and see.
Someone really needs to fix that loose shutter, King Elokar said, annoyed.
The light faded. The rattling stopped. Kaladin blinked, lowering his hand.
Someone remind me to ask Nakhal to see to it. Elokar said, pacing behind his couch. The shutter shouldn't leak. This is my palace, not a village tavern.
We'll make sure it's seen to, Adolin said. He sat in a chair beside the hearth, flipping through a book filled with sketches. His brother sat in a chair next to him, hands clasped in his lap. He was probably sore from his training, but he didn't show it. Instead, he had gotten a small box out of his pocket and was repeatedly opening it, turning it in his hand, rubbing one side, then shutting it with a click. He did it over and over and over. He stared at nothing as he did it. He seemed to do that a lot. Elokar continued pacing. Idrin, head of the king's guard, stood near the king, straight-backed, green eyes forward. He was dark-skinned for an Alethi, perhaps with some Azish blood in him, and wore a full beard. Men from Bridge Four had been taking shifts with his men, as Dalinar suggested, and so far Kaladin had been impressed by the man and the team he had run. However, when the horns for a plateau run sounded, Idrin would turn toward them, and his expression would grow longing. He wanted to be out there fighting. Sadius's betrayal had made a lot of the soldiers in camp similarly eager, as if they wanted the chance to prove how strong Dalinar's army was. More rumbling came from the storm outside. It was odd not to be cold during a high storm. The barrack always felt chilly. This room was well heated, though not by a fire. Instead, the hearth held a ruby the size of Kaladin's fist, one that could have paid to feed everyone in his hometown for weeks. Kaladin left the window and sauntered toward the fireplace under the pretext of inspecting the gemstone. He really wanted a glimpse of whatever it was Adolin was looking through. Many men refused to even look at books, considering it unmasculine. Adolin didn't seem to be bothered by that. Curious. As he approached the hearth, Kaladin passed the door to a side room where Dalinar and Navani had retired at the advent of the storm. Kaladin had wanted to post a guard inside. They'd refused. Well, this is the only way into that room, he thought. There's not even a window. This time, if words appeared on the wall, he would know for certain nobody was sneaking in. Kaladin stooped down, inspecting the ruby in the hearth, which was held in place by a wire enclosure. Its strong heat made his face prickle with sweat. Storms, that ruby was so large that the light infusing it should have blinded him. Instead, he could stare into its depths and see the light moving inside. People thought that the illumination from gemstones was steady and calm, but that was just in contrast to flickering candlelight. If you looked deeply into a stone, you could see the light shifting with the chaotic pattern of a blowing storm. It was not calm inside, not by a wind or a whisper. Never seen a heating fabrial before, I assume? Renarin asked. Kaladin glanced at the bespectacled prince. He wore an Alethi High Lord's uniform, like that of Adolin. In fact, Kaladin had never seen them wearing anything else, other than shard plate, of course. No, I haven't, Kaladin said. New technology, Renarin said, still playing with his little metal box. My aunt built that one herself. Every time I turn around, it seems the world has changed somehow. Kaladin grunted. I know how that feels. Part of him yearned to suck in the light of that gemstone. A foolish move. There'd be enough in there to make him glow like a bonfire. He lowered his hands and strolled past Adolin's chair. The sketches in Adolin's book were of men in fine clothing. The drawings were quite good, their faces done in as much detail as their garments. Fashion? Kaladin asked. He hadn't intended to speak, but it came out anyway. You're spending the high storm looking for new clothing? Adolin snapped the book closed. But you only wear uniforms, Kaladin said, confused. Do you need to be here, Bridge Boy? Adolin demanded. Surely nobody is going to come for us during a high storm, of all things. The fact that you assume that, Kaladin said, is why I need to be here. What better time would there be for an assassination attempt? The winds would cover shouts, and help would be slow in coming when everyone has taken cover to wait out the storm. Seems to me this is one of the times when His Majesty most needs guards. The king stopped pacing and pointed.
That makes sense.
Why hasn't anyone else ever explained that to me?
He looked at Edrin, who remained stoic. Adolin sighed. You could at least leave Renarin and me out of it, he said softly to Kaladin. It's easier to protect you when you're all together, Bright Lord, Kaladin said, walking away. Plus, you can defend each other. Dalinar had been intending to stay with Navani during the storm anyway. Kaladin approached the window again, listening to the storm pass outside. Had he really seen the things he thought he had during his time out in the storm? A face as vast as the sky? The Stormfather himself? I am a god, Syl had said. A little piece of one. Eventually, the storm passed, and Kaladin opened the window to a black sky, a few phantom clouds shining with no man's light. The storm had started a few hours into the night, but nobody could sleep during a storm. He hated when a high storm came so late. He often felt exhausted the next day. The side room door opened, and Dalinar stepped out, trailed by Navani. The statuesque woman carried a large notebook. Kaladin had heard, of course, about the High Prince's fits during storms. His men were divided on the topic. Some thought Dalinar was frightened of high storms, and his terror sent him into convulsions. Others whispered that with age the Blackthorn was losing his mind. Kaladin badly wanted to know which it was. His fate and that of his men was tied to this man's health. "Numbers, sir?" Kaladin asked, peeking into the room, looking at the walls. No, Dalinar said. Sometimes they come just after the storm, Kaladin said. I have men in the hall outside. I would prefer if everyone remained here for a short time. Dalinar nodded. As you wish, soldier. Kaladin walked to the exit. Beyond, some men of Bridge Four and of the King's Guard stood on watch. Kaladin nodded to Leighton, then pointed for them to watch out on the balcony. Kaladin would catch the Phantom scratching those numbers, if indeed such a person existed. Behind, Renarin and Adolin approached their father. Anything new? Renarin asked softly. No, Dalinar said. The vision was a repeat. But they're not coming in the same order as last time, and some are new, so perhaps there is something to learn we have not yet discovered. Noticing Kaladin, he trailed off, then changed the topic. Well, as long as we're waiting here, perhaps I can get an update. Adolin, when can we expect more duels? I'm trying, Adolin said with a grimace. I thought beating Salinor would drive others to want to try me, but they're stalling instead.
Problematic, Navani said. Weren't you always saying that everyone wanted to duel you?
They did, Adolin said. When I couldn't duel, at least. Now every time I make an offer, people start shuffling their feet and looking away.
Have you tried anyone in Sadeus's camp? The king asked eagerly.
No, Adolin said. But he's only got one shard-bearer other than himself, Amaram. Kaladin felt a shiver.
Well, you won't be dueling him, Dalinar said, chuckling.
He sat down on the couch, Brightness Navani settling in beside him, and fondly on his knee.
We might have him on our side. I've been speaking to High Lord Amaram.
You think you can get him to secede?
The king asked. Is that possible? Kaladin asked, surprised. The light eyes turned to him. Navani blinked as if noticing him for the first time.
Yes, it is possible, Dalinar said. Most of the territory that Amaram oversees would remain with Sadeus, but he could bring his personal land to my princedom, along with his shards. Usually it requires a land trade with a princedom bordering the one a High Lord wishes to join.
It hasn't happened in over a decade, Adolin said, shaking his head.
I'm working on him, Dalinar said. But Amaram, he wants to bring Sadeus and me together instead. He thinks we can get along again.
Adolin snorted. That possibility blew away the day Sadeus betrayed us.
Probably long before that day, Dalinar said, even if I didn't see it. Is there anyone else you could challenge, Adolin?
I'm going to try Talonor, Adolin said, and then Kalashor.
Neither full shard-bearers, Nabani said with a frown. The first has only the blade, the second only the plate.
All of the full shard-bearers have refused me, Adolin said with a shrug. Those two are eager, thirsty for notoriety. One of them might agree where others haven't.
Kaladin folded his arms, leaning back against the wall. And if you defeat them, won't it scare off others from fighting you?
When I beat them, Adolin said, glancing at Kaladin's relaxed posture and frowning, father will maneuver others into agreeing to duels.
But it will have to stop sometime, right? Kaladin asked. Eventually the other High Princes will realize what's happening. They'll refuse to be goaded into further duels. It might be happening already. That's why they don't accept.
Someone will, Adolin said, standing. And once I start winning, others will begin to see me as a real challenge. They'll want to test themselves.
That seemed optimistic to Kaladin.
Captain Kaladin is right, Dalinar said.
Adolin turned toward his father.
There's no need to fight every shard-bearer in camp, Dalinar said softly. We need to narrow our attack. Choose duels for you that point us toward the ultimate goal.
Which is? Adolin asked.
Undermining Sadeus.
Dalinar almost sounded regretful.
Killing him in a duel if we have to. Everyone in camp knows the sides in this power struggle. This won't work if we punish everyone equally. We need to show those in the middle, those deciding whom to follow, the advantages of trust, cooperation on plateau runs, help from one another's shard-bearers. We show them what it's like to be part of a real kingdom.
The others grew quiet. The king turned away with a shake of his head. He didn't believe, at least not fully, in what Dalinar wished to achieve. Kaladin found himself annoyed. Why should he be? Dalinar had agreed with him. He stewed for a moment and then realized that he was probably still upset because someone had mentioned Amaram. Even hearing the man's name put Kaladin out of sorts. He kept thinking something should happen, something should change, now that such a murderer was in camp. Yet everything just kept on going. It was frustrating. Made him want to lash out. He needed to do something about it.
I assume we've waited long enough, Adolin said to his father. I can go.
Dalinar sighed, nodding. Adolin pulled open the door and strode away. Renarin followed at a slower pace, hauling that shard blade he was still bonding, sheathed in its protective strips. As they passed the group of guards Kaladin had put outside, Scar and three others broke off to follow them. Kaladin walked to the door, doing a quick count of who was left. 4 men total.
Moash, Kaladin said, noticing the man yawning. How long have you been on duty today?
Moash shrugged.
1 shift guarding Brightness Navani, 1 shift with the King's Guard.
I'm working them too hard, Kaladin thought. Stormfather, I don't have enough men, even with the left of our Cobalt Guard that Dalinar is sending to me.
Head back and get some sleep, Kaladin said. You too, Bissig. I saw you on shift this morning.
And you? Moash asked Kaladin.
I'm fine.
He had Stormlight to keep him alert.
True, using Stormlight that way could be dangerous. It provoked him to act, to be more impulsive.
He wasn't sure he liked what it did to him when he used it outside of battle.
Moash raised an eyebrow. You've got to be at least as tired as I am, Cal.
I'll go back in a bit, Kaladin said. You need some time off, Moash. You'll get sloppy if you don't take it.
I have to pull 2 shifts, Moash said, shrugging. At least if you want me to train with the King's Guard as well as doing my regular guard duty.
Kaladin drew his lips to a line. That was important. Moash needed to think like a bodyguard, and there was no better way than serving on an already established crew.
My shift here with the King's Guard is almost over, Moash noted. I'll head back after.
Fine, Kaladin said.
Keep Leighton with you.
Nadam, you and Mart guard Brightness Navani. I'll see Dalinar back to camp and post guards at his door.
And you'll get some sleep? Moash asked. The others glanced at Kaladin. They were worried as well.
Yes, fine. Kaladin turned back to the room where Dalinar was helping Navani to her feet. He'd walk her to her door, as he did most evenings.
Kaladin debated for a moment, then stepped up to the High Prince.
Sir, there's something I need to talk to you about.
Can it wait until I'm done here? Dalinar said.
Yes, sir, Kaladin said. I'll wait at the palace's front doors, then we'll be your guard on the way back to camp.
Dalinar led Navani away, joined by two bridgeman guards. Kaladin made his own way down the corridor, thinking. Servants had already come by to open the corridor windows, and Syl floated in through one as a spinning swirl of mist. Giggling, she spun around him a few times before going out another window. She always got more spren-like during a high storm. The air smelled wet and fresh. The whole world felt clean after a high storm, scrubbed by nature's abrasive. He reached the front of the palace, where a pair of the king's guards stood on watch. Kaladin nodded to them and got crisp salutes in return. Then he fetched a sphere lantern from the guard post and filled it with his own spheres. From the front of the palace, Kaladin could look out over all 10 war camps. As always after a storm, the light of refreshed spheres sparkled everywhere, their gemstones ablaze with captured fragments of the tempest that had passed. Standing there, Kaladin confronted what he needed to say to Dalinar. He rehearsed it silently more than once, but still wasn't ready when the High Prince emerged at last from the palace doors. Nadam saluted from behind them, handing Dalinar off to Kaladin, then jogged back to join Mart outside Brightness Navani's door. The High Prince started down the switchbacks of the side route down from the pinnacle to the stables below. Kaladin fell in beside him. Dalinar appeared deeply distracted by something.
He hasn't ever announced anything about his fits during high storms, Kaladin thought. Shouldn't he say something?
They'd talked about visions earlier. What was it Dalinar saw, or thought he saw?
So, soldier, Dalinar said as they walked, what is it you wanted to discuss?
Kaladin took a deep breath.
A year ago, I was a soldier in Amaram's army.
So that's where you learned, Dalinar said. I should have guessed. Amaram is the only general in Sadius's princedom with any real leadership ability.
Sir, Kaladin said, stopping on the steps. He betrayed me and my men.
Dalinar stopped and turned to look at him.
A poor battle decision, then? Nobody is perfect, soldier. If he sent your men into a bad situation, I doubt he intended to do so.
Just push through it, Kaladin told himself, noticing Syl sitting on a shale bark ridge just to the right. She nodded at him. He has to know. It was just... He'd never spoken of this, not in full. Not even to Rock, Teft, and the others.
It wasn't that, sir, Kaladin said, meeting Dalinar's eyes by sphere light. I know where Amaram got his shard blade. I was there. I killed the shard-bearer carrying it.
That can't be the case, Dalinar said slowly. If you had, you'd hold the plate and blade.
Amaram took it for himself, then slaughtered everyone who knew the truth, Kaladin said. Everyone but a lone soldier who, in his guilt, Amaram branded a slave and sold, rather than murdering.
Dalinar stood in silence. From this angle, the hillside behind him was completely dark, lit only by stars. A few spheres glowed in Dalinar's pocket, shining through the fabric of his uniform.
Amaram is one of the best men I know, Dalinar said. His honor is spotless. I've never even known him to take undue advantage of an opponent in a duel, despite cases when it would have been acceptable.
Kaladin didn't respond. He'd believed that, too, at one point.
Do you have any proof? Dalinar asked. You understand that I can't take one man's word on something of this nature.
"One dark-eyed man's word, you mean?" Kaladin said, gritting his teeth.
"It's not the color of your eyes that is the problem," Dalinar said, "but the severity of your accusation. The words you speak are dangerous. Do you have any proof, soldier?"
"There were others there when he took the shards. Men of his personal guard did the actual killing at his command. And there was a storm warden there, middle-aged with a peaked face. He wore a beard like an ardent." He paused. "They were all complicit in the act, but maybe..."
Dalinar sighed softly in the night. "Have you spoken this accusation to anyone else?"
"No," Kaladin said.
"Continue to hold your tongue. I'll talk to Amaram. Thank you for telling me of this."
"Sir," Kaladin said, taking a step closer to Dalinar, "if you really believe in justice, you..."
"That's enough for the moment, son,"
Dalinar cut in, voice calm but cool.
"You've had your say, unless you can offer me anything else by way of evidence."
Kaladin forced down his immediate burst of anger. It was difficult.
"I appreciated your input when we were talking about my son's jewels earlier," Dalinar said. "This is the second time you've added something important to one of our conferences, I believe."
"Thank you, sir."
"But, soldier," Dalinar said, "you're walking quite a line between helpfulness and insubordination in the way you treat me and mine. You have a chip on your shoulder the size of a boulder. I ignore it because I know what was done to you, and I can see the soldier beneath. That's the man I hired for this job."
Kaladin ground his teeth and nodded.
"Yes, sir."
"Good. Now run along."
"Sir, but I must escort—"
"I think I'll return to the palace," Dalinar said. "I don't think I'll get much sleep tonight, so I might want to pester the Dowager with my thoughts. Her guards can watch over me. I'll take one with me when I return to my camp."
Kaladin let out a long breath, then saluted. "Fine," he thought, continuing down the dark, damp path. When he reached the bottom, Dalinar was still standing up above, now just a shadow. He seemed lost in thought. Kaladin turned and walked back toward Dalinar's war camp. Syl flitted up and landed on his shoulder.
"See?" she said. "He listened."
"No, he didn't, Syl."
"What?"
"He replied and said—" "I told him something he didn't want to hear," Kaladin said. "Even if he does look into it, he'll find plenty of reasons to dismiss what I said. In the end, it will be my word against Amaram's. Stormfather, I shouldn't have said anything."
"You'd let it go, then?"
"Storms, no," Kaladin said. "I'd find my own justice."
"Oh."
Syl settled on his shoulder. They walked for a long while, eventually approaching the war camp.
"You're not a skybreaker, Kaladin," Syl finally said. "You're not supposed to be like this."
"A what?" he asked, stepping over scuttling Kremlings in the dark. They came out in force after a storm, when plants unfolded to lap up the water. That was one of the orders, wasn't it? He did know some little of them. Everyone did, from the legends.
"Yes,"
Syl said, voice soft.
"I'm worried about you, Kaladin. I thought things would be better once you were free from the bridges."
"Things are better," he said. "None of my men have been killed since we were freed."
"But you—"
She didn't seem to know what else to say.
"I thought you might be like the person you were before. I can remember a man on a field of battle. A man who fought—"
"That man is dead, Syl," Kaladin said, waving to the guards as he entered the war camp. Once again, light and motion surrounded him, people running quick errands, parshmen repairing buildings damaged by the storm. "During my time as a bridgeman, all I had to worry about was my men. Now things are different. I have to become someone. I just don't know who yet." When he reached Bridge 4's barrack, Rock was dishing out the evening stew.
far later than usual, but some of the men were on odd shifts. The men weren't limited to stew any longer, but they still insisted on it for the evening meal. Kaladin took a bowl gratefully, nodding to Bissig, who was relaxing with several of the others and chatting about how they actually missed carrying their bridge. Kaladin had instilled in them a respect for it, much as a soldier respected his spear. Stew. Bridges. They spoke so fondly of things that had once been emblems of their captivity. Kaladin took a bite, then stopped, noticing a new man leaning against a rock beside the fire. "Do I know you?" he asked, pointing at the bald, muscular man. He had tan skin, like an Alethi, but he didn't seem to have the right face shape. "Herdazian?"
"Oh, don't mind Punyo," Lopin called from nearby. "He's my cousin."
"You had a cousin on the bridge cruise?" Kaladin asked.
"Nah," Lopin said. "He just heard my mother say we needed more guards, so he came to help. I got him a uniform and things."
The newcomer, Punyo, smiled and raised his spoon.
"Bridge 4,"
he said with a thick Herdazian accent. "Are you a soldier?" Kaladin asked him.
"Yes," the man said. "Bright Law Rowian Army. Not worry. I swore to Colin instead now. For my cousin."
He smiled affably. "You can't just leave your army, Punyo," Kaladin said, rubbing his forehead. "It's called desertion."
"Not for us," Lopin called. "We're Herdazian. Nobody can tell us apart anyway." "Yes," Punyo said. "I leave for the homeland once a year. When I come back, nobody remembers me."
He shrugged.
"This time, I come here."
Kaladin sighed, but the man looked like he knew his way around a spear, and Kaladin did need more men.
"Fine. Just pretend you were one of the bridgemen from the start, all right?"
"Bridge 4,
the man said enthusiastically. Kaladin passed him and found his customary place by the fire to relax and think. He didn't get that chance, however, as someone stepped up and squatted down before him, a man with marbled skin and a Bridge 4 uniform. "Shen?" Kaladin asked.
"Sir?"
Shen continued to stare at him.
"Is there something you wanted?"
Kaladin asked.
"Am I really Bridge 4?
Shen asked. "Of course you are."
"Where is my spear?"
Kaladin looked Shen in the eyes.
"What do you think?"
"I think that I am not Bridge 4,
Shen said, taking time to think with each word.
"I am Bridge 4's slave."
It was like a punch to Kaladin's gut. He'd hardly heard a dozen words out of the man during their time together, and now this? The words smarted either way. Here was a man who, unlike the others, wasn't welcome to leave and make his way back in the world. Dalinar had freed the rest of Bridge 4, but a Parsh man? He'd be a slave no matter where he went or what he did. What could Kaladin say? Storms. "I appreciate your help when we were scavenging. I know it was difficult for you to see what we did down there sometimes." Shen waited, still squatting, listening. He regarded Kaladin with those impenetrable, solid black Parshman eyes of his. "I can't start arming Parshmen, Shen," Kaladin said. "The Light Eyes barely accept us as it is. If I gave you a spear, think of the storm it would cause." Shen nodded, face displaying no hint of his emotions. He stood up straight.
"A slave I am, then."
He withdrew. Kaladin knocked his head back against the stone behind him, staring up at the sky. Storming man. He had a good life for a Parsh man. Certainly more freedom than any other of his kind. "And were you satisfied with that?" a voice inside him asked. "Were you happy to be a well-treated slave? Or did you try to run, fight your way to freedom?" What a mess. He mulled over those thoughts, digging into his stew. He got two bites down before Natum, one of the men who'd been guarding at the palace, came stumbling into their camp, sweating, frantic, and red-cheeked from running.
"The king!"
Natum said, puffing.
"An assassin!"
23. Assassin.
Night form predicting what will be, the form of shadows mind to foresee. As the gods did leave, the night form whispered. A new storm will come, someday to break. A new storm, a new world to make. A new storm, a new path to take. The night form listens.
From the Listener Song of Secrets, 17th stanza. The king was fine. One hand on the doorframe, Kaladin stood gasping from his run back to the palace. Inside, Elokar, Dalinar, Navani, and both of Dalinar's sons spoke together. Nobody was dead. Nobody was dead.
Stormfather, he thought, stepping into the room. For a moment I felt like I did on the plateaus, watching my men charge the Parshendi. He hardly knew these people, but they were his duty. He hadn't thought that his protectiveness could apply to Light Eyes.
"Well, at least he ran here,"
the king said, waving off the attentions of a woman who was trying to bandage a gash on his forehead.
"You see, Edrin, this is what a good bodyguard looks like. I bet he wouldn't have let this happen."
The captain of the king's guard stood near the door, red-faced. He looked away, then stalked out into the hallway. Kaladin raised a hand to his head, bewildered. Comments like that one from the king were not going to help his men get along with Dalinar's soldiers. Inside the room, a mess of guards, servants, and members of Bridge Four stood around, looking confused or embarrassed. Natum was there. He'd been on duty with the king's guard, as was Moash.
"Moash," Kaladin called, "you're supposed to be back in the camp asleep."
"So are you," Moash said. Kaladin grunted, trotting over, speaking more softly.
"Were you here when it happened?"
"I'd just left," Moash said. "Finishing my shift with the king's guard. I heard yelling and came back as quickly as I could." He nodded toward the open balcony door. "Come have a look." They walked out onto the balcony, which was a circular stone pathway that ran around the peak rooms of the palace, a terrace cut into the stone itself. From such a height, the balcony offered an unparalleled view overlooking the war camps and the plains beyond. Some members of the king's guard stood there, inspecting the balcony railing with sphere lamps. A section of the ironwork structure had twisted outward and hung precariously over the drop.
"From what we've figured," Moash said, pointing, "the king came out here to think, as he likes to do."
Kaladin nodded, walking with Moash. The stone floor beneath was still wet from high storm rain. They reached the place where the railing was ripped, several guards making way for them. Kaladin looked down over the side. The drop was a good 100 feet onto the rocks below. Sill drifted through the air down there, making lazy glowing circles.
"Damnation, Kaladin," Moash said, taking his arm. "Are you trying to make me panic?"
"I wonder if I could survive that fall." He'd dropped half that once before, filled with stormlight, and had landed without trouble. He stepped back for Moash's sake, though even before gaining his special abilities, heights had fascinated him. It felt liberating to be up so high. Just you and the air itself. He knelt down, looking at the places where the footings of the iron railing had been mortared into holes in the stone. "The railing pulled free of its mountings?" he asked, poking his finger into a hole, then pulling it out with mortar dust on his fingers.
"Yeah," Moash said, several of the men of the king's guard nodding.
"Could just be a flaw in the design," Kaladin said.
"Captain," said one of the guardsmen, "I was here when it happened, watching him on the balcony. It fell right out, barely a sound. I was standing here looking out at the plains and thinking to myself, and next I knew His Majesty was hanging right there,
holding on for his life and cursing like a caravan worker.
The guard blushed.
Sir.
Kaladin stood, inspecting the metalwork. So the king had leaned against this section of the railing, and it had bent forward, the mountings at the bottom giving way. It had almost come free completely, but fortunately one bar had held tight. The king had grabbed hold and clung to it long enough to be rescued. This should never have been possible. The thing looked as if it had been constructed of wood and rope first, then soul cast into iron. Shaking another section, he found it incredibly secure. Even a few footings giving out shouldn't have let the whole thing fall off. The metal pieces would have had to come apart. He moved to the right, inspecting some of those that had ripped free of one another. The two pieces of metal had been sheared at a joint. Smoothly, cleanly. The doorway into the king's chamber darkened as Dalinar Kholin stepped out onto the balcony.
"In," he said to Moash and the other guards. "Close the door. I'd like to speak to Captain Kaladin."
They obeyed, though Moash went reluctantly. Dalinar walked up to Kaladin as the windows closed, giving them privacy. Despite his age, the High Prince's figure was an intimidating one, wide-shouldered, built like a brick wall.
"Sir," Kaladin said, "I should have..."
"This wasn't your fault," Dalinar said. "The king wasn't under your care. Even if he was, I wouldn't reprimand you, just as I wouldn't reprimand Edrin. I wouldn't expect bodyguards to inspect architecture."
"Yes, sir," Kaladin said.
Dalinar knelt down to inspect the mountings.
"You like to take responsibility for things, don't you? A commendable attribute in an officer."
Dalinar rose and looked at the place where the rail had been cut.
"What is your assessment?"
"Someone definitely chipped at the mortar," Kaladin said, "and sabotaged the railing." Dalinar nodded.
"I agree. This was a deliberate attempt on the king's life.
However, sir..."
"Yes?"
"Whoever tried this is an idiot."
Dalinar looked to him, raising an eyebrow in the lantern light.
"How could they know where the king would lean?" Kaladin said. "Or even that he would. This trap could easily have caught someone else, and then the would-be assassins would have exposed themselves for nothing. In fact, that is what happened. The king survived, and now we're aware of them."
"We've been expecting assassins," Dalinar said, "and not just because of the incident with the king's armor. Half the powerful men in this camp are probably contemplating some kind of assassination attempt, so an attempt on Elokar's life doesn't tell us as much as you'd think. As to how they knew to catch him here, he has a favorite spot for standing, leaning against the rail and looking out over the shattered plains. Anyone who watches his patterns would have known where to apply their sabotage."
"But sir," Kaladin said, "it's just so convoluted. If they have access to the king's private chambers, then why not hide an assassin inside? Or use poison?"
"Poison is as unlikely to work as this was," Dalinar said, waving toward the railing. "The king's food and drink is tasted. As for a hidden assassin, one might run into guards." He stood up. "But I agree that such methods would probably have had a greater chance at success. The fact that they didn't try it that way tells us something, assuming these are the same people who planted those flawed gemstones in the king's armor. They prefer non-confrontational methods. It's not that they're idiots, they're
cowards," Kaladin realized. "They want to make the assassination look like an accident. They're timid. They may have waited this long so that suspicion would die down."
"Yes," Dalinar said, rising, looking troubled.
"This time, though, they made a big mistake."
"How?"
Kaladin walked to the cut section he had inspected earlier and knelt down to rub the smooth section.
"What cuts iron so cleanly?"
Dalinar leaned down, inspecting the cut, then took out a sphere for more light. He grunted.
"It's supposed to look like the joint came apart, I'd guess."
"And does it?"
Kaladin asked.
No. That was a shard blade.
Narrows down our suspects a tad, I'd think. Dalinar nodded.
Don't tell anyone else. We'll hide that we noticed the shard blade cut, maybe gain an edge. It's too late to pretend that we think this was an accident, but we don't have to reveal everything.
Yes, sir.
The king is insisting that I put you in charge of guarding him, Dalinar said. We might have to move up our timetable for that.
I'm not ready, Kaladin said. My men are stretched thin with the duties they already have.
I know, Dalinar said softly. He seemed hesitant. This was done by someone on the inside, you realize.
Kaladin felt cold.
The king's own chambers? That means a servant or one of his guards. Men in the king's guard might have had access to his armor, too.
Dalinar looked at Kaladin, face lit by the sphere in his hand. A strong face with a nose that had once been broken. Blunt. Real.
I don't know whom I can trust these days. Can I trust you, Kaladin Stormblessed?
Yes. I swear it.
Dalinar nodded.
I'm going to relieve Edrin of this post and assign him to a command in my army. It will sate the king, but I'll make certain Edrin knows he isn't being punished. I suspect he'll enjoy the new command more anyway.
Yes, sir.
I'll ask him for his best men, Dalinar said, and those will be under your command for now. Use them as little as possible. I eventually want the king being guarded only by men from the bridge crews. Men you trust. Men who have no part in war camp politics. Choose carefully. I don't want to replace potential traitors with former thieves who can be easily bought.
Yes, sir, Kaladin said,
feeling a large weight settle on his shoulders. Dalinar stood up.
I don't know what else to do. A man needs to be able to trust his own guards.
He walked back toward the door into the room. The tone of his voice sounded deeply troubled.
Sir?
Kaladin asked. This wasn't the assassination attempt you were expecting, was it?
No, Dalinar said, hand on the doorknob. I agree with your assessment. This wasn't the work of someone who knows what they're doing. Considering how contrived it was, I'm actually surprised at how close it came to working.
He leveled his gaze at Kaladin.
If Sadeus decides to strike, or worse, the assassin who claimed my brother's life, it will not go so well for us. The storm is yet to come.
He pulled open the door, letting out the complaints of the king, which had been muffled behind it. Elokar was ranting that nobody took his safety seriously, that nobody listened, that they should be looking for the things he saw over his shoulder in the mirror, whatever that meant. The tirade sounded like the whining of a spoiled child. Kaladin looked at the twisted rail, imagining the king dangling from it. He had good reason to be out of sorts. But then, wasn't a king supposed to be better than that? Didn't his calling demand that he be able to keep his composure under pressure? Kaladin found it difficult to imagine Dalinar reacting with such ranting, regardless of the situation.
Your job isn't to judge, he told himself, waving to Syl and walking away from the balcony. Your job is to protect these people.
Somehow.
24. Tin. Decay form destroys the souls of dreams, a form of gods to avoid, it seems. Seek not its touch, nor beckon its screams. Deny it. Watch where you walk, your toes to tread, or hill or rocky riverbed. Hold dear the fears that fill your head. Defy it. From the Listener Song of Secrets, 27th stanza.
Well, you see, Gaz said as he sanded the wood on Shallan's wagon. She sat nearby, listening as she worked. Most of us, We joined the fight at the Shattered Plains for revenge, you know? Those marbles killed the king. It was going to be this grand thing and such. A fight for vengeance. A way to show the world that the Alethi don't stand for betrayal. Yeah, Red agreed. The lanky bearded soldier pulled Freya Barr from her wagon. With this one removed, it left only three at each corner to hold up the roof. He dropped the bar with satisfaction, then dusted off his work gloves. This would help transform the vehicle from a rolling cage into a conveyance more suitable for a light-eyed lady. I remember it, Red continued, sitting down on the wagon's bed, legs dangling. The call to arms came to us from High Prince Vama himself, and it moved through Far Coast like a bad stench. Every second man of age joined the cause. People wondered if you were a coward if you went to the pub for a drink but didn't wear a recruit's patch. I joined up with five of my buddies. They're all dead now, rotting in those storm-cursed chasms. So you just got tired of fighting? Shallan asked. She had a desk now. Well, a table. A small piece of travel furniture that could be taken apart easily. They'd moved it out of the wagon, and she was using it to review some of Yasna's notes. The caravan was making camp as the day waned. They'd traveled well today, but Shallan wasn't pushing them hard after what they'd all been through. After 4 days of travel, they were approaching the section of the corridor where bandit strikes were much less likely. They were getting close to the Shattered Plains and the safety they offered. "Tired of fighting," Gaz said, chuckling as he took a hinge and began nailing it in place. Occasionally, he would glance to the side, a kind of nervous tick. "Damnation, no. It wasn't us. It was the storming light eyes. No offense intended, Brightness, but storm them and storm them good." "They stopped fighting to win," Red softly added, "and they started fighting for spheres." "Every day," Gaz said. "Every storming day we'd get up and fight on those plateaus, and we wouldn't make any progress. Who cared if we made progress? It was the gem hearts the High Princes were after. And there we were, locked into virtual slavery by our military oaths. No right of travel as good citizens should have since we'd enlisted. We were dying, bleeding, and suffering so they could get rich. That was all. So we left. A bunch of us who drank together, though we served different High Princes. We left them and their war behind." "Now, Gaz," Red said, "that isn't everything. Be honest with the lady. Didn't you owe some spheres to the debtmongers, too? What was that you told us about being one step from being turned into a bridgeman?" "Here now," Gaz said. "That's my old life. Ain't nothing in that old life that matters anymore." He finished with the hammer. "Besides, Brightness Shallan said our debts would be taken care of." "Everything will be forgiven," Shallan said. "See? Except your breath," she added. Gaz looked up, a blush rising on his scarred face, but Red just laughed. After a moment, Gaz gave in to chuckling. There was something desperately affable about these soldiers. They had seized the chance to live a normal life again and were determined to hold to it. There hadn't been a single problem with discipline in the days they'd been together, and they were quick, even eager, to be of service to her. Evidence of that came as Gaz folded the side of her wagon back up, then opened a latch and lowered a small window to let the light in. He gestured with a smile at his new window. "Maybe not nice enough to befit a light-eyed lady, but at least you'll be able to see out now." "Not bad," Red said, clapping slowly. "Why didn't you tell us you'd trained as a carpenter?" "I haven't trained as one," Gaz said, expression turning oddly solemn. "I spent some time around a lumberyard, that's all. You pick up a few things."
"It's very nice, Gaz," Shallan said. "I appreciate it deeply."
"It's nothing. You should probably have one on the other side, too. I'll see if I can scrounge another hinge off the merchants.
Already kissing the feet of our new master, Gaz?
Vatha stepped up to the group. Shallan hadn't noticed him approaching. The leader of the former deserters held a small bowl of steaming curry from the dinner cauldron. Shallan could smell the pungent peppers. While it would have made a nice change from the stew she'd eaten with the slavers, the caravan had proper women's food, which she was obliged to eat. Maybe she could sneak a bite of the curry when nobody was looking.
"You didn't ever offer to make things like this for me, Gaz,"
Vatha said, dipping his bread and tearing off a chunk with his teeth. He spoke while chewing.
"You seem happy to have been made a servant to the Light Eyes again. It's a wonder your shirt isn't torn up from all the crawling and scraping you've been doing."
Gaz blushed again. "So far as I know, Vatha," Shallan said, "you didn't have a wagon. So what is it you'd have wanted Gaz to make a window in? Your head, perhaps? I'm certain we can arrange that." Vatha smiled as he ate, though it wasn't a particularly pleasant smile.
"Did he tell you about the money he owes?"
"We will handle that problem when the time comes."
"This lot is going to be more trouble than you think, little Light Eyes," Vatha said, shaking his head as he dipped his bread again. "Going right back to where they were before."
"This time they'll be heroes for rescuing me." He snorted.
"This lot will never be heroes. They're creme brightness, pure and simple."
Nearby, Gaz looked down and Red turned away, but neither disagreed with the assessment. "You're trying very hard to beat them down, Vatha," Shallan said, standing. "Are you that afraid of being wrong? One would assume you'd be accustomed to it by now." He grunted.
"Be careful, girl. You wouldn't want to accidentally insult a man."
"The last thing I'd want to do is accidentally insult you, Vatha," Shallan said. "To think that I couldn't manage it on purpose if I wanted." He looked at her, then flushed and took a moment, trying